Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com. This is the iPhone Alley Podcast, episode 73 for February 8th, 2010. Did he pull it out of his pants? This podcast is brought to you by GoToAssist. For your free 30-day trial, go to gotoassist.com/alley. All right, it's time for the iPhone Alley Podcast, the show that discusses all things iPhone, iPod Touch, App Store, iPad, all that fantastic stuff. Tonight, this is take two, so we're all, it'll be a game to see which part we're acting out from previous discussion and what's fresh. So tonight, Jeff Gamut's here from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Michael, and just so you know, I never pay attention to anything we're saying, even as we say it, so it'll all be fresh for me.
Yeah, me too. That's great. So also here is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey again.
Hey. So
it almost feels like we just did this.
It's so weird. So the first thing we have on our agenda, Stephen Colbert was at the Grammys, and he had an iPad, and that was cool. I'm guessing that he, you know, had it for about 5 seconds.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
And then they just, you know, took it back from him as soon as he got off the stage, but it was cool. He said that he had, you know, his list of nominees, right, on the iPad. I'm thinking he didn't, because, you know, I don't think they let Stephen Colbert have one for any amount of time. Although it would be cool if they did put it on there for him. Maybe they did that.
Yeah, you know, maybe he has a MobileMe account, and so they set up, you know, his notes and everything so it would sync through, and, you know, because I'm sure in those brief moments right before he had it in his hand, there was plenty of time to go through all that sort of configuration.
I don't think so. I think he had it as he was walking on the stage, although he did have to dig around. In his, did he pull it out of his pants, or did he pull it? Was it his pants?
He pulled it out of a coat pocket.
Okay.
Inside jacket pocket, but I doubt it. It was probably like squished under his arm or something.
Right.
Yeah. Or stuck in his waistband.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the interesting thing about that is we got from there to talking about how I jailbreak my phone, and these are fantastic transitions between one topic and another because, you know, whatever. But essentially, I had to restore my phone last week. I went through a lot of stuff that was, it just was very irritating. And the issue I was having with my phone is that I would put it on the charger at night and it would say charging, and the little lightning bolt would be in the icon. And the thing is, the next morning it would not be on because it would be dead. It didn't actually charge, or it would just be almost dead. And even though the little indicator thing had the little plug saying that it was fully charged, and that plug would stay there even if I unplugged it from the wall, it would only go away if I rebooted. So I'm not sure if that's a jailbreak thing or if that's a just, you know, weird phone thing. So I would really appreciate it if anybody who's had that issue send in an email, podcast@iPhoneAlley.com, and let me know if you've had that specific issue happen with your phone. But yeah, so I went to restore, and I was backing up all my files kind of over SSH, just kind of grabbing the things, cherry picking what I did want to save over so I didn't, you know, bring back anything dirty from, you know, just restoring it through iTunes. And as I was doing that, I saw news that Apple stopped signing 3.1.2 because they put out 3.1.3 last week. And so that means that any late generation iPod Touch or iPhone 3GS, those have to be signed by Apple in a specific way. And so Apple stopped doing that. And the only way to get around that is to use Sorik's server. He has a mock Apple authentication server where he collects your iPhone's unique information to then generate that certificate. So you have to go through and change your host's file and do a lot of hacky things, and then it worked perfectly, so that was great, and I was able to restore to 3.1.2. But, you know, jailbreak. I'm not sure if I'm getting a lot of issues from mobile substrate or what it is. So right now my phone's behaving itself, but we'll have to see.
And then I said, this is why I don't jailbreak.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's just the hoops you have to jump through. Not that I'm against jailbreaking. You know, I think there's some amazingly cool stuff being done in that community, but it's, if I ever just need to restore my phone for whatever reason, I don't want to have to worry about that kind of stuff. I don't want to have to worry about that. Oh, Apple, you know, stop signing the old version. So I
right,
have to
yeah. Well, here's
the new version.
Well, the thing is, I could have just upgraded to 3.13, no problem. I would just lose all the jailbreak stuff. So if I hit the update button, it just, because there are two partitions on your phone, it just erases everything on the system partition, leaves the user partition alone, and then lets it go. And so all the jailbreaky stuff goes away. But you know, there are benefits to being able to do that. Is, you know, you can get in there, and you know, on your Mac, if you have an issue with an application and it's doing something weird, you can always just dump a plist into the trash and start over. And Jeff, you last week you had an issue with your phone and you had to restore, right?
Right. And I restored without restoring my backup.
Yeah, because you didn't want to bring anything.
Right. And for the most part, that was okay, except that there were a couple data files that I really would have liked to have had come back over, but I couldn't selectively grab just specific pieces of the backup and restore that. It's all or nothing. So I ended up losing some data that I would have preferred not to to have lost.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I had no choice, since it's an all or nothing thing. So, but on the upside, hey, my iPhone isn't crashing on me.
Is it super fast?
I'm sorry, what?
Is it super fast now?
It almost felt like going from a 3G to a 3GS.
Yeah.
The performance improvement that I got. And, I was having a lot of really sluggish things happening. Like when I'd flick to go to another app screen, it wouldn't happen, or it happened really slow, like it would start to slide over and then freeze.
Oh, weird.
And so I'd see half of one screen, half of the other, and I'd have to wait. And then eventually, boom, the screen I want to see finishes sliding in.
So you have do you have a 3GS?
No, I have a 3G.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was just like getting so slow that at times I was thinking, you know, I can't use this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the there are a few things that I've noticed that really bog down the phone. The first one is that if you have a lot of applications on the home screen, that I think Apple might be doing something a little bit different from, you know, back in 2.0 and early 3, but still having a lot of apps on your home screen, that definitely takes up some extra RAM. And on a regular 3G phone, you don't want to, you know, RAM is precious, even on the 3GS.
Right.
And the other thing is, for whatever weird reason, it seems like the more music you have on there, at least in my 3GS, the more music I have, it seems like it's just a little bit slower. And I know it's not because it's not because I'm simply using space on the disc. It's obviously doing something where it's indexing that. I'm not sure.
Does it slow down specifically when you're playing music and using apps at the same time, or is it just in general?
I noticed that as soon as I restored my phone, did all several things, used it for a little bit, noticed it was really snappy, threw it on the computer to load a bunch of music, didn't, you know, add apps, just music, and I let it index after it did that, and it was a little bit pokier. So I may be imagining that, but who knows? So
the bigger thing I want to go back to that Jeff mentioned was about the app data. And this is something I've been thinking about ever since the iPad announcement, because I think this is a bigger problem with apps and sort of how the iPhone OS operates. versus the Mac OS. So everybody was wondering, is it going to be iPhone OS on the tablet, or is it going to be, you know, Mac OS 10? And for the most part, I think Apple's choice was kind of a good one. But the one area of concern I have is this data issue, because I've had similar situations where I've had to go back a couple backups to restore, say, my phone, because there was something in a backup, you know, like Jeff, you were mentioning, there might be something in a backup you don't want to come back because you think that's where the problem might be. So you go back two versions and then come weeks later to find out that one of the apps I had, you know, I'm missing data. Because, oops, that data was in my latest backup, but I went back a week, so I've lost a week's worth of data, and there's no way for me to go back and selectively restore data for a given app, unless I'm lucky enough to have an app that the developer developed a way to, you know, move something to the cloud or sync it with my Mac or do something outside of the default iPhone OS ecosystem in terms of how you store data. But if it's just in the app database that's contained within that application itself, it's
you're
really
screwed.
It's only in the backup and you can't restore. And so I was glad to hear in 3.2 with the SDK, they're saying there's probably going to be this idea of a shared storage space that will almost mount on your desktop, like a USB. I don't know. I'm assuming it's working more over Wi-Fi, over the kind of network connection that'll show up, you know, in the Finder, supposedly.
Yeah, I think it is over Wi-Fi.
Yeah. But at the very least, it sounds like developers are finally going to have a space. And what was I reading just about this week? The sort of the USB connectivity developers have been using with the Stans app, right?
Right, been, yeah, that was
they've
a big
been kind
story.
Of hacking around using private APIs that'll access the kind of music area.
Now, was
media
this
storage.
Was that a hack, or was because they're allowed to technically developers are allowed to get access to the USB stuff, but I'm not sure what they were doing.
Well, so they were making it so you could actually load files, EPUB files, over USB.
And why is that wrong?
Because I guess the API calls to do that are private API calls. I'm still kind of delving into it, but supposedly it surrounds, there's a lot of apps that do this to kind of enable direct USB loading of data.
Right. And that's okay, right? You're allowed to do that.
On the iPhone? No. You go through iTunes or some other method.
You can't go through iTunes. I know that for sure, but developers are allowed to have access to the dock connector and Bluetooth. So why not pull data over that way?
I haven't looked into it.
It's because the way I understood it was that Apple was just simply saying no for no apparent reason.
No, this was in order to do that, there's private APIs that have to be employed to do that technique. And so it's the standard thing that Apple has always said, you can't use private APIs. You're using private APIs. Don't do it. That's the update, the latest updates I've been reading. So the speculation early on was that no, Apple's just, you know, trying to shut down EPUB. And no, they've apparently done this in several apps that are using the same kinds of calls to move the data. And I haven't gotten into the specifics, but basically it has something to do with using a USB sync to go directly into that media access area, which the apps then can, through standard APIs, get access to the information in there, put it in and out of that location. But I think the difference is getting it out of that location or into that location through a USB sync connection is not necessarily allowed.
Gotcha.
So I think they could do the Wi-Fi thing. So I think if they switched over and did the thing where, you know, you launch Stanza, which I think Stanza already does, right? And it mounts as it becomes a little network drive and you can load data over. It's been a while since I used Stanza.
I haven't used it either in a very long time. But as far as I know, and we would definitely like to hear back from you guys, but as far as I know, you can use the dock connector. Obviously, you can just use it for creating accessories for your application.
Right.
But I'm pretty sure that does extend into using your personal sandbox space for your app to load data on and off. But what I think you were saying, Adam, is that they were using more of a public space on the phone, right? They were using like the iPod portion of the storage to do that, or maybe they were using
the
some kind of
media,
private
media
API
area, which I think
I know
is accessible,
that,
like you were saying.
It definitely is accessible because iTunes has to, you know, write to that. And I think there's an application called from Ecamm, was it Phone View, that actually,
oh, right.
Yeah, PhoneView lets you get access to that. So if they were using that same kind of space, you know, that totally makes sense. But you were talking about the iPad and what it has. It, you know, we've heard that you can load stuff on and off with iPhone 3.2 in this kind of shared space, so that you don't really have a file browser, but the applications know what they can read.
Right, but then I'm hoping what I'm hoping would happen there is that an individual app could store its data files there, and those data files could be synced over to my Mac and just backed up individually. So, if I needed to get one app's data file back, I could just restore that one after doing a restore on my phone and go, okay, I want that data back, but I don't want the data from this other app, because that's where I think the corruption issue with that app is. Sure. And I don't. So to be able to separate that stuff is going to be very important, specifically on a device like the iPad, but I'm hoping it extends over to the iPhone and the iPod Touch OS as well.
The only thing I'm thinking about for that is I doubt they'll save setting files and property list files, stuff that, you know, generally those are the culprits in that kind of situation, where you want to delete a file to get your app working. It's not usually a document. So I'm wondering if I think that stuff would still be stored in the little app sandbox, and the documents would be the only thing that goes into the shared space.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, can those things be packaged up into a little package file? I haven't gotten that deep into iPhone development, but you know, I would imagine things like, I mean, somehow the data file for my, say, like 1Password, I mean, that's synced up to my system, and I can, you know, I can restore that back from the app. I guess in that case, I have a kind of companion desktop app, but I don't know. I'm thinking other things like Waitbot. Waitbot is specifically one where I've lost data from that app.
That'll actually let you sync.
And this was before they had added that feature.
It
came later, mm-hmm. and I immediately turned on that feature once they had it. And I think that's what you're pointing out there is exactly what app developers have had to do to kind of work around this issue, right? They've had to create some way to sync up in the cloud somewhere, or sync back through a desktop app back to the Mac.
Yeah, and I feel like that's definitely a problem that developers shouldn't have to address themselves. It's something that Apple should figure out how to do, because I understand in one sense it's very easy for a majority of the users who would never think, oh, I got to delete this file to make my thing run faster or better or not crash. You know, most people don't want to do that, but for us, it would be very helpful. And I think that's one disadvantage of the approach to them kind of making it less of a computer and just work more.
Yeah, and I'll give you another great example of where this is a huge problem. And I was having some battery issues with my phone. They eventually ended up replacing it. I think we've talked about it on the show. But one time, one of the fixes was they said, go back, you know, completely factory restore the phone, wipe it, put the OS on, but do not restore from backup. They specifically said, do not restore from backup. Whatever you do, reload all the apps, but do not restore from backup. So basically, they're telling me any app that I couldn't get the data through some other mechanism, all that data, gone.
Yeah, and I feel like that's unacceptable, because even with Apple's built-in apps, you know, a lot of people, including myself, I like to have an SMS archive, because that's really handy to have all of my SMSs.
Yeah, mine's gone now.
You know, you can use, I think it's Backup Extractor. iPhone Backup Extractor will let you hit those backups that you have, hopefully still on your computer.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, I know. It's what it came down to when I realized, oh, I don't have any of my SMS archives anymore, and several other things. My realization was, I'm holding on to all these archives because I think I might need to reference something, but I have never needed to go back and reference something. So I thought, okay, I'm just going to let it go, mm-hmm. and we'll see how this works out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess the point is, big thing this week was, you know, there's a lot of talk about the file system and do we really need file systems anymore, and all these apps are just going to be aware of, you know, where their documents are on the iPad and just magically pop up, and, you know, people don't want to deal with the hierarchies and things like that, which is a, you know, philosophy Apple's taken with iPhoto, they've taken it with iMovie now, with kind of how you can manage all your video clips within iMovie. And I like that paradigm, but there are some potential disadvantages. And I think sometimes Apple's just hoping that people won't notice. You know, it's sort of like...
Yeah, they're working it out too. They're kind of working on it as they go. You know?
Well, or even that, I mean, to Jeff's point, I mean, there's been many times when I've lost files or data and not realized for years later. You know, you go back and you're like, where was that file? Oh, yeah, that was on my Mac, you know, I had three years ago, and I never moved that over, and it's lost.
Right.
And then you're just kind of like, oh, well. And so I've had that happen with iPhone apps. There's some apps that, you know, I might not use for a couple weeks, and you go back to it, and the data's gone, and then you kind of go, oh, well, data's gone. And you just move on. You just kind of move forward. But I don't know that that's necessarily a good thing. But no,
that's actually a bad thing. I mean, the whole idea of data being transient to the point that it can just be gone at any given moment, and we're supposed to simply accept that as okay, seems very wrong to me.
Yeah. So I'm hoping it's going to get addressed with this new shared storage location. I mean, we'll see. But it certainly is a problem they're going to have to deal with. And I think the point is that the iPad is just going to bring this issue more to the forefront as
because
and more people are using that device for creating and storing and accessing documents. I mean, like things they're actually really doing a lot of real work on. I mean, you can do real work on the iPhone, but I don't think it's going to be as prevalent as something that someone does as it will be on the iPad.
Well, one of the cool things that we heard last week from Engadget is that they found that there might be support within the operating system, at least in Safari, and this may just simply be a new feature of 3.2, because apps can, you know, access this shared space. But it looks like Safari will allow you to download files now on the iPad, which, you know, just is one of those things that I'm sure we've all lived without for so long on our iPhones that it's going to be fantastic to have back. And I would love to have that back. You know, it'll be interesting to see what translates over in 3.2 back to the phone.
Yeah, you know, I'm using Dropbox on my iPhone to give myself a form of file download support.
But isn't that just, you can really only create images in the Dropbox app, right?
Right, yeah. Which is why I said a form of file download. Yeah, it sure would be nice if we could actually suck files down off the internet directly onto our iPad and then iPhone also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't you think some of that is likely, some of those features like that are likely there to decrease the dependency on 3G, needing a 3G connection? Because could you imagine if built into Safari was some way to define, hey, these are the websites that I go to, and you know what, in the middle of the night, I want you to suck down the latest versions of these and just kind of store them in an offline format.
Well, they
could
put it in the 10 megabyte limit mode. Say, you know, that's as far as you can do unless you're on Wi-Fi.
Right, right. But I mean, you could drill down on it. You could subscribe to different websites and say, okay, drill down three levels deep on each one of these, you know, 10 sites and just store all the data. And then when I go out on the train,
do like an RSS reader built right into Safari.
Not even an RSS reader. This is more like, I mean, we've had these tools on the Mac before where you can kind of suck down, you know, different websites.
Oh, like caching things.
Yeah, just like cache five levels deep of, you know, Ars Technica for me and, you know, from the homepage and just store it on there. And these things don't take up that much space. I mean, you're talking, you know, maybe a few megabytes.
Okay. Yeah, we should.
You know, update that every night while I'm sleeping. So when I get up in the morning and I'm off to the train and I have only a Wi-Fi iPad, guess what? I can read through Ars Technica until I can get to another Wi-Fi connection. So sort of a transient way to surf the web without Wi-Fi.
Kind of in like extra Instapaper.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Instapaper is a perfect example. That's exactly how I do this now, right?
Yeah. Okay, so we should move on because we've only got so much time. Let's see, what else? 3.2 and Engadget also found support hooks for running a video call in full or portion of the screen, as well as accepting or declining video calls, which also kind of feeds into, I don't think we talked about it, the rumor that there's a camera on the iPad, or there will be. So last week, someone was, it looks like, going through footage from the keynote and noticed at, you know, several frames that you can see something that's obviously very centered at the top of the iPad and kind of perfectly sized to be a camera. And I sent this over to you, Adam. And as soon as I, you know, I heard about it and right. I said, okay, I'm going to go back into the footage. And I started, you know, jumping through spots where it might be. And sure enough, it was right there. It looked like at a certain set of frames, the light caught the front of the iPad or the iPad, you know, whatever camera caught some light. And it, there's definitely something there. It might be an ambient light sensor, but what kind of points us toward it being a camera is there was a company that allegedly gets parts, you know, replacement parts for iPods and phones and Macs and stuff. And they got, I guess it was a frame part for the iPad. And there was a little spot there where coincidentally in this video, it looked like there would be something there. They, pulled a camera out of a MacBook Pro and it fit perfectly in that spot.
Okay, this is where I piss off everyone.
Okay,
there's
go.
No camera in the iPad. There is not going to be a camera in the iPad, no matter how badly people want to pretend like that is a secret surprise feature Apple's going to announce right before the iPad ships. There is no camera in the iPad.
Are you sure, Jeff? Did you hold it? Did you play with it? Do you have one?
I have not held it. I have not played with one. I do not have one, and there still won't be a camera.
Okay, give us the reason, because I think I know where you're going to go with that.
Okay. Try and do a web chat with someone while you hold your laptop up.
Right, yeah.
And now, you're not going to be able to hold the iPad still. And if you... And so then people say, well, then you get the dock. Okay, so if you get the dock stand to put it in, now what you're saying is anyone that actually wants to use this as a legit video chat tool has to go buy accessories before they can,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't make sense. So, you know, maybe they tried it in a prototype and decided, yeah, no, this isn't going to work. And that's one of the prototypes that Steve Jobs had on stage. Who knows? Maybe it is just a light sensor. Now, having that little slot in the frame that perfectly holds a laptop EyeSight camera, that totally makes sense. Because if Apple decides at some point down the road that they want to add a camera in, or if the early production prototype runs, they were trying out cameras, and nothing else in the frame needed to change for the final version, why remanufacture the whole process for creating the frame? Just leave the little hole there. It doesn't matter because nothing's going to be in it.
Yeah, we've seen
maybe
that with
Apple
the iPod
used
Touch.
Down the road. Who knows?
Yeah. The only thing I can think of, if they were going to put a camera in there, it might be tilted, you know, at an angle to make more sense for video chat, but that's still pretty awkward. So I definitely get what you're saying. You have to hold it up to make it make sense, and that's weird.
Yeah, I think people are so desperate to want this video camera thing to be in there that they will go to nearly any length to manufacture enough information for themselves to believe that there really will be a camera, and I just don't see it happening.
I agree.
Yeah. Do you guys watch The Big Bang Theory?
Yeah.
There was, yes. I was watching season one, and there's, I'm going to get the quote wrong, but basically they're doing a video chat, and one of the guys goes, you know, I never really quite understood why this video chat thing was any good for anything other than porn.
And I know which episode you're talking about. It's the one where, what's his name, Raj, where... Right. His parents are trying to control his life through his webcam.
Right, exactly. And you know, I'm just thinking about that, and I've asked this question of so many people. We all have EyeSights built into our Macs. We've had them. We have cameras on our phones. We have, I mean, in reality, how much video chatting do you do? And we're in, I do it maybe a few times a month, and mostly that's for podcasting reasons. That's for social media reasons. So that's such a small slice of the community. And I've done video chats with, you know, family members and stuff like that, and most of them don't like it. They don't like the experience. They have no interest in doing it.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that I have a lot of friends Well, I won't say a lot. I have several friends who do use the video chat on a semi-regular basis. It's not all the time, for sure. But it, I do see
generational
it. I think
too,
it might be a generational thing. And so we'll have to see how that progresses. I don't use the iChat camera hardly ever, the iSight camera. I don't do that.
Yeah, I'm like Adam. Mine gets used rarely, and it's always for video podcasting.
Mm-hmm.
I take that back. I have Delicious Library, and so I use the camera for scanning barcodes. Scanning.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I don't know. It almost seems to make more sense to me. No, it doesn't. I was going to say to have a rear-facing camera, but camera either way just doesn't. Yeah, it's one of those nice features, and I my assumption is they'll add it in eventually, but I think just they decided on version one, like Jeff was saying, yeah, we don't need it, and likely some of the things that we're seeing, I even thought about it when you were showing me that image, Michael. I thought, well, maybe it's just light hitting that hole in the frame because they have the frame there, because there's another closer view of that same portion, and he's still tilting it back and forth, and you cannot see anything through that black bezel.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming the flash was just bright enough to get through whatever black layer they had around the mat, and maybe it's just reflecting off that hole in the frame. And Jeff, what you said makes perfect sense to me. I mean, if they've already done the manufacturing and they just decided we're going to leave the camera out, just like they did with, you know, that they find things on the iPod Touch,
right?
The latest iPod Touch, the same way where there's space for a camera and there's things on the board for a camera, but there's just no camera.
Right.
Right.
Well, so I don't know if they found any like connectors or anything. I don't remember. But they definitely found a space that was just big enough for the same type of camera that's in the iPhone, right, which may mean that at some point they're thinking about putting the camera in. It may mean that the way the board component's laid out most effectively, you end up with a space there that's just big enough for a camera, even though they have no plans to put one in.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the biggest use for a camera on the iPad I could see would be filling in pictures for your contacts or something like that. You know?
Yeah, and then you'd want it on the back. There was a great picture on Dig that they added, you know, they just coated the entire back of the iPad with cameras.
Oh yeah, with 300 cameras, and the caption was, "There, are you happy now?"
Yeah,
or something like that. Yeah, that was funny.
Okay, so let's move on to our sponsor. Is Citrix with GoTo Assist Express. Guys, have you, I don't have to ask, but I'm sure you guys have had to help family members and friends with computer problems in the past. And, you know, a lot of times you're not in the same house or even in the same state. And, it's really hard to help them over the phone with computer problems. So you kind of want to see their computer screen and, you know, cause you don't want to walk them through over the phone. That's tough. So have you guys used, GoTo Assist or any of the, GoTo My PC products?
I've used it, and actually they use it at my company or my former company now, but but it was very, very, the CSRs loved it because it made it so much easier and they could get their calls done so much more efficiently because it was just easier to see what the customer was doing and be able to walk them through it or to be able to, you know, reach in there, grab their machine very easily. And it was just as literally as easy as, hey, I'm going to send you a link.
Yeah.
Click this and then I can help you with your issue.
It really is the coolest thing. I hadn't tried GoTo Assist until they were a sponsor, but I pulled it up, tried it out, and it's so cool because on my side and on their side, it's very easy to install and make happen. So you bring it up, you log in, and the first time on your end, you go to the website, you click go, it downloads an app, and then you're ready to start doing it. And so when you want to help someone out, you open the application, you say, I want to start a new session. And it says, you know, here's the session ID. Would you like to send a link? You know, if you're talking to someone on you know, iChat, then you can just send them a link right there. They click it. And in just a couple minutes, you know, you're seeing their screen and you're helping them out. You can also email the link the same way. It's really fast. They don't have to install anything. They just go to a link and it pops up for you and you can see what they're doing. You can help them out. There's live chat. You can send files back and forth. It works on both Mac and PC. If you want to try it, you got to go to assist.com/Ally. There's a 30-day free trial. And it's very cool when you actually, you know, I am a friend and I said, hey, I want to try this out. Do you have a couple minutes? And I send it to him, and you know, most of my friends are fairly geeky, and so they can figure stuff out. And I say, you know, don't try to, you know, don't go through any extra hoops, you know, just click the link and see what happens. He goes, that was just incredibly easy. And the great thing is, once it's finished, none of the stuff remains on the computer. So it doesn't, you know, it doesn't mess with anything. It's incredibly easy, for, you know, if your grandma needs help. I'm planning to get my grandma a computer soon, and I can't wait to use that to help her. The really cool thing is you can bring up an entire system profile, Mac or PC. So the Mac has the system profiler, but if you want to bring up the system profile, it gives you a rundown of everything in the person's computer, even down to specific, you know, memory slots, how much memory and what speed and what type is in each memory slot. So even if it's a, you know, a hardware problem saying, you know, hey, my, you know, I just installed some new RAM, but it's not showing up. Why wouldn't it, you know, why isn't it showing up? Can you help me out with that? It shows you what processes are running, what applications are running, what OS, all that fantastic stuff, everything you need to do to figure out what's going on with the computer and help someone out. It's very cool. There's 128-bit SSL encryption, so it's very secure if you're worried about that. I don't think there have been any exploits for any of Citrix's products ever. You can try it free for 30 days if you go to gotoassist.com/Ally, and we thank them so much for their support of the iPhone Ally podcast. And so with that, let's move on. What do we have here? The Omni Group announced, I think right after the iPad announcement, they're going to be bringing all five of their major productivity apps to the iPad, and
that's reason enough to go buy an iPad.
You know, I have to agree with you on that, because having a full multi-touch version of OmniFocus, if I just had a big OmniFocus pad, man, that's just, that's productivity, I'll tell you, because, you know, especially with, you know, preparing for this for Macworld, I sent out a tweet actually today, just, you know, because I was thinking about, I would go insane if I didn't have OmniFocus. So they have, you know, more than just OmniFocus. Obviously, OmniFocus is the big GTD app, but they also have OmniGraffle, OmniGraph Sketcher. What else do they have?
OmniOutliner
and OmniPlan. They plan to get all those ready for the tablet. I believe they're going to start work on OmniGraffle and OmniFocus first for the iPad, but they're also shifting stuff around to get OmniGraph Sketcher going. But they plan to have them all done, and that's fantastic news from such a great developer. Go ahead, Adam.
I was going to say, I'm looking forward to OmniGraffle. That's a valuable tool for me, and to see that on the iPad, it's going to be really interesting to see what they do with it. And they do such great work, and I'm really looking forward to trying to track down Ken at Macworld. I'm hoping they're there. They're usually there.
They will be there. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to track him down too. Him. Yeah. I want to.
I have a friend that when I told her that OmniGraffle was going to be written for the iPad, she goes, "Oh, then I'm going to go buy an iPad."
Yeah.
I mean, just for OmniGraffle, that's why she's going to go buy an iPad.
Yeah, and I honestly feel like, you know, right now as it is with the iPad, I'm, you know, just getting an iPad, I'm pretty underwhelmed by it, you know? But then I start thinking about the applications that can be written, because you see what they've done with just the built-in applications. They're so much better. They're so much more powerful, and there's just so much room to create a great interface for getting stuff done. And apps from Omni Group, you know, that sounds fantastic. But I was also thinking the other day, you know, I am trying to get into doing some DJing, you know, actual proper, you know, mixing and doing really cool stuff. And that requires that you have an external piece of hardware for controlling the application, because it's too hard to get in there and, you know, tweak knobs and move sliders and change tracks and all that stuff just using a mouse. You actually want to have some kind of controller interface. And I thought, there's this product called the Lemur, and it's a $2,000 multi-touch pad, It's much thicker, much bulkier, and it has half the resolution of the iPad, $2,000, and it only does that one thing. The iPad is $500, and I've already seen DJ applications for the iPhone. All someone has to do, you know, even if they charged, you know, $25-$50 for something that just killed, I think that we're going to start seeing what we saw with the Macintosh, you know, with a lot of talk about what's the killer app. You know, having a killer app, that, you know, something that'll make you go out and buy an iPad.
And I think there's going to be a lot of killer apps for different people. It comes back to something right. I think I probably mentioned last week. Everybody I talked to has a different reason for wanting an iPad.
Yeah.
And you pointed out, I think, what a lot of people aren't counting on. There's been so much in the press about what we saw at the keynote and what the iPad has and does that was featured in that, you know, hour and a half. But you point out where it's really going to excel, and people, you need to look at what happened with the iPhone when they finally added the App Store. That's when the iPhone really took off. You know, I think that along with the price drop and with the iPad, you already have a good introductory price and you have the existing App Store. But what really is going to push it forward is things like the Omni Group coming out and saying, we're going to do all our apps for, you know, to me, the iWork part of that presentation, that was where the potential was. It was like, okay, here yes. we've rewritten all, or actually look at all the apps. They were all rewritten for the iPad and they all look awesome. And we're going to see that from third-party developers. And then you're going to have that DJ app that you want. The one other key that I think wasn't mentioned and really Apple needs to now focus on is that dock connector, because that is the, you know, sort of only input into that device. That's the vein for that device.
Right.
And they need to open up. I mean, we saw that thing. They opened up the dock connector for these third-party peripherals, but have we seen any?
But there was like one from Griffin, and it was like last week.
Where's the cool heart monitor thing they showed? Or you know,
right, where? Yeah.
I mean, medical applications alone could be huge for the iPad, but they have to open up that. And it's my understanding, Apple, the only thing that's happening there is Apple's just having to approve. It's another one of these approval process things, or this is what I've been told, that, you know, they're keeping tight reins on who they're letting in. So the APIs are there, but they're not approving the hardware or letting people build the hardware. So even though the software hooks are there, it's the hardware that's being held up. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. These are rumors that I'm hearing. But something, I mean, you'd think we'd have a million of these little connectors where the iPhone and the software running on the iPhone is your interface, and the developer only has to build a cool piece of hardware that's controlled by the iPhone. We saw a little bit of it at CES with the helicopter, but that was all going over Wi-Fi.
And I think there was some stuff from, oh my gosh, there was what's the speaker maker? There was iHome. They have a couple docks that will have that kind of integration. But the, you know, with that DJ app that I'm thinking about, you definitely have to have a wired USB connection. You know, that's what a MIDI controller has anyway. It's just a straight USB connection. And I just assumed that. Yeah, you know, I'm not sure about the approval process. If they're more strict about that, I'm not sure why they would be. But it'll be interesting to see, because right now, as far as I know, the DJ apps on the iPhone go over US or go over Wi-Fi, and that makes them kind of gimmicky because you can't really rely on the Wi-Fi connection. Even, you know, you can do an ad hoc connection, that's fine. You can get it connected, but it's not reliable enough to do, you know, real performing with.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you can take your iPad and slide it into your car, and that becomes the whole interface for your car, and you can slide it into, you know, whatever medical device, and that instantly becomes that the brain for that device. Or like you're saying, you have this piece of DJ hardware, you hook all your gear, your turntables, your iPods or whatever into that, and then you dock your iPad and up pops all your controls. It's going to be some amazing stuff going on.
That's
going
to be good. Okay, so let's move on. We only have a little bit of time left. What do you guys think about the rumors that that we're going to be seeing some new apps in the form of widgets? So we're talking about the calculator, and the clock and the weather app. We didn't see those on the iPad, and there are rumors that we might see those as dashboard apps. But, you know, at the same time, that was an iPad prototype, so maybe we're just going to see them. You know, those weren't rewritten yet. What do you guys think about that?
I don't think we're going to see widgets. And the reason I think we won't see widgets is because the iPhone OS is already set up and structured to work a certain way, and I just don't see Apple making a change to that for the iPad. Now, I could be totally wrong, and I know for a lot of people that they would love that, but widgets to me don't make sense unless you have multitasking, mm-hmm. so that you can have widgets running on top of and at the same time as other applications.
Yeah, and I think that we were also hearing from TechCrunch that we're still going to be seeing a more Mac-like version of the iPad. And I think, was this from,
I'm just going to jump in again and say,
Mike Arrington.
It's the same thing as the camera in the iPad. People are so desperate to want this other device.
They're making it up, yeah.
They're totally making it up. Now, not like people are lying, but they grab little bits of info here and there and put them together to create the support or the image that they want. But there's no bigger iPad whatever thing running Mac OS X. People just really wanted that, and so now that's become the next rumor.
Yep.
Downer tonight, aren't I?
I'm with Jeff on that one. I don't know. It's like, you know, there's going to be a touchscreen iMac was the rumor, 2 years ago, right?
Right,
yeah. Right.
Because HP had the touchscreen thing, and we've seen how well that's done, because, you know, what I really want to do is put my hands all over the front of my iMac and hold them up there and move everything around on the screen, because that's going to be really comfortable for long hours of work and stuff like that.
That's brilliant. Let's all go get one now.
The iPad works because of its size. I mean, how did they demo it? They had a couch. First time they've ever had a couch on the stage, because really, look at this is how Apple's thinking about it. This is a device you're going to pick up. You're going to have it in your lap. You're going to have it in your seat on the plane. You're going to, you know, you're going to have it in the stand every once in a while, maybe when you need to do longer, you know, typing stuff with a Bluetooth keyboard sitting at a desk. But overall, I think they're really seeing this as exactly what they said it was, which is this sort of in-between device. And I think a lot of people are having a hard time believing that. And I think until we actually use it and see how people are using it, that's when it'll be proven or disproven. But, you know, I don't know. This a bigger one? No, can we at least see what this one's like and play yeah. with it before we decide that we need a bigger one?
I've heard that it's magical once you actually play with it.
I've heard that too. Now, also keep in mind that we've had rumors off and on before the iPhone came out, that Apple was working on an iPhone mini.
Right.
And yeah. When have we ever seen that? And those rumors, I really think, came into being because people so wanted Apple to create this product that they just made the rumors happen.
Yeah. Now, on the widget thing, too, I want to just jump back to that real quick because, you know, my observations on that kind of go back to what I was saying before it came out. This whole, you know, iPhone apps running in their own little, you know, black boxed window or double-sized, I still think there's a room for a whole class of applications that would run as widgets. But I'm with you, Jeff. I think they would run in little windows at the same time through, you know, a multitasking format. And I've been wondering now, would it be possible to kind of divide out a subclass of application that Apple would allow for multitasking that would be sandboxed in terms of its memory space and what it was doing, but was just not allowed to be fully functioning? Things like a clock. A clock's not going to likely, other than maybe calling out to a time server, is not going to have to go out and get data, right? It's not going to have to be doing things in the background that...
Yeah, that you've already got a clock running anyway.
Right.
Yeah, the clock is already going to be counting anyhow, you're right.
Or a calculator or... Yeah, but, you know, it might still need to make a HTTP call to a time server, right? So... That's sure. pretty benign. You know, can Apple maybe define something within the SDK that says these are not, we're not going to call them full apps, they're like little mini apps, and we're going to allow these types of applications with this limited functionality to be the things that you can multitask with.
And that would be, you know, widgets, maybe.
A widget-like thing, yeah. I'm thinking something beyond just a JavaScript, you know, like a Yahoo widget, which is pretty, I mean, widgets running in the Mac right now are web apps, so maybe it would be. I mean, maybe Apple's more comfortable with that. They certainly were comfortable with web apps from the very beginning.
I think they talked about when Steve Jobs introduced the phone, and this Gruber pointed this out, that he actually called them widgets, and yeah, maybe they're not widgets. Maybe they never were. Mm-hmm. But I think there might be a possibility that they were intending to be
But they can't run, they have to run on the desktop, and they have to be out there as I'm running other things. And this concept of, you know, going into a space, a dashboard space,
yeah,
I don't think works on the Mac desktop very well, and I don't think it works on the, it's not going to work on the iPad very well. If I have to hit a button every time I want to see the time on the iPad, that's going to be very annoying.
Well, they also, I think Gizmodo pulled up a patent this week, kind of showing or describing, you know, a touch sensitive bezel sort of deal like the Pre has, you know, an extra gesture area. And I don't feel like Apple's going to do something like that, but it's an interesting idea, you know, like the idea of having hot corners on your Mac or something like that.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
But then again, where are you going to hold the device without activating some
false positives?
Okay. So let's move on to the last bit of iPhone stuff. The I guess there's a rumor that there's going to be HD recording on the iPhone, and there really isn't a whole lot to discuss on that. It's just simply that someone's been digging around further within the API stuff in the SDK, and they've found that the resolution of whatever this new mystery device is that's going to record video, they found that the recording is going to be larger. It's going to be HD, which I feel like, doesn't the sensor have to be larger, though, to make it HD on an iPhone? Just the current sensor?
I don't think the current sensor would support HD.
I don't think so either. But how much larger would the sensor have to be? I guess the Flip has HD, but the Flip's kind of chunky.
And it has a much bigger lens and much bigger sensor.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. Also, AT&T, this is, I think, one of the bigger stories. AT&T has finally allowed Sling to, they've given them the green light to let Sling Player work over 3G, which is completely awesome, because when I saw Sling Player, you know, at Macworld last year, everybody, I think that was the big story at Macworld, right? Was Sling Player, but, you know, I think they said at the time, we're probably not going to be available over 3G.
You know, I'm thinking that they went ahead and allowed that to go through, excuse me, because that allows AT&T to say, look, you know, if you want to do over-the-air streaming video like you can do on other phones, there's this whole Sling thing out there. And I think it was a move on AT&T's part to make the iPhone seem even more appealing to people that might otherwise be jumping over to some other device on another platform that does allow streaming.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have to set any of the infrastructure up because Sling took care of it for them.
Yeah. Okay. So we are still looking for writers for iPhone Ally. So if you have experience with blogging and or, you know, writing tech stuff, go to iPhoneAlley.com. There's a link on every single page. It just says, want to write for iPhone Alley. We're hiring. Click the We're Hiring button, and you'll see a page with all the information there to figure that out. We're also giving away Macworld party tickets. So we've got 10 tickets for the Macworld Blast and the Macworld and Cirque de Mac. Both are fantastic don't-miss-it parties, and we've got 10 of them. And the deal is I'm going to be tweeting the night before, you know, where I'm going to be for the tickets. So I think I'll be tweeting on Wednesday night for Cirque de Mac tickets. Look for the tweet, iPhone Alley, twitter.com/iPhone Alley. And, I'll say, you know, I'll be here at this time tomorrow morning. Come find me and you can have a ticket, and just, you know, it can be you or it can be you and a friend. We'll give out, you know, I'll give out pairs if you, you know, have a friend with you or a, you know, girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever. And, same deal with, the Macworld Blast. I'll be doing a tweet on Thursday night, letting you know where to find me on Friday morning. So pay attention there. And we are going to do our iPhone picks. And I'll let Adam go first because I think he has to get going soon.
Yeah, I think we'll be okay. I can probably ride out to the end of the show.
Okay.
Has anybody done WordPress yet? This was going to be my pick last week and I had to duck out early.
I don't think we did.
Okay. Well, I didn't realize until couple weeks ago that WordPress had updated their app, but because I had the WordPress app for the longest time and it was okay. I could do things with it, but they have WordPress 2 app, and I think it's a separate download. I actually found it on
the
app store.
It's a separate download.
Yeah. So you have to re-download it. So if you have the old one, go get WordPress 2. If you already have WordPress 2 or you have a WordPress blog and are looking for something on the iPhone for managing it, the new app is really cool. You can set it up for multiple blogs if you have more than one. What I really like about it is it has comments, and then it'll show you, you know, current ones as well as pending ones. You can go in and you can mark them as spam. You can unapprove them, so you can manage them on the go, because comments are becoming a big difficult thing for me to manage, because I'm not always near a computer, but people are commenting all the time, and you want to be able to, especially if you have some sort of spam comment that gets through the filters, you want to be able to go in and pull that down as quickly as possible. So I'm now able to do that. Go in and manage posts. You can look at, I can look at pending posts. So I have other people who occasionally write for the MacCast. I can go in there, I can review, I can do quick edits, and then approve and post their articles to the blog. It's just become a really convenient, handy tool. The new layout is just much, I think, simpler to use than the original app. So it actually has become a worthwhile tool on my phone, whereas the last time it was more kind of like a toy. It was like, oh, cool, I can post something from my iPhone. I think it has some image resizing stuff in terms of if you need to add photos and things. So I haven't played around with that too much. I just got it literally like last week. But just alone for the being able to manage comments, it's worth the download. It's free, of course. So,
I'm going to totally back you up on that one. WordPress 2 is a totally awesome application.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That's my pick.
And it's free, WordPress 2. Jeff, do you have an iPhone pick this week?
I do. And it's a little application called Classics, and it's an ebook reader app that includes a bunch of public domain books. And what I think is cool about the application is that the interface works a lot like, or it resembles what iBooks.
Apple copied it for iBooks.
Okay, there you go. So if you want to have a way to play around and see kind of what iBooks is going to be like when the iPad comes out, go get Classics, and it has a lot of really great books included with it already, and it's free.
And it's awesome. I agree with that, and I have to clarify one thing, or just mention one thing. So Classics copied Delicious Library.
That's
just
true.
Just like iBooks did. Mm-hmm. But here's the big difference. Classics asked Will Shipley if they could use the design. Apple didn't bother.
No, they wouldn't. Why would they? Although they do have the same... You have to realize, though, that they have the original Delicious Library designer now. Who's yes. the guy? Who's the other guy? It's...
Crap, I just forgot his name.
Well, I know for sure, yeah. You know, when I met with Will last year, he kept mentioning how he was the same guy who came up with the battery design for the iPhone, the big green battery.
Mm-hmm.
So they have that guy. So it's, I guess it is still Delicious Libraries, you know.
It definitely has a Delicious Library look to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of a big story this week, and, you know, we can argue and debate the design, but certainly one of the first apps to use it was Delicious Library, and you're right, the designer went over to Apple, and who knows if that's his influence coming into the iBooks thing. I mean, you could also argue it's one of those things you deduce. You know, hey, I'm going to have a library, I'm going to have a bookshelf, it's going to look like a bookshelf.
Sure. That totally makes sense.
Mike Mattis.
That's it.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
Yeah, Mike is a brilliant interface guy.
Yes, he is. Okay, so you were talking about Classics. It's fantastic. It's delicious in its design. One of my friends, Sebastian DeWith, actually helped out on one of the covers.
And, oh, that's cool.
And it's free. Right?
Yeah, it's free.
So. It's free now that they came out with iBooks. Or they announced it.
And you get, I don't know, it probably has like 15 or 20 books with it, probably like 15 books. So,
well, and they update it.
Yeah, they update it. So periodically you'll get new books in the library. And what a great way to be able to have a collection of really great titles at your fingertips all the time. And you don't even have to go pay for them. They're just right there for you.
And again, it's very pretty. So if you're looking for an application to restore a sense of childlike wonder in your life, like I am all the time.
Well, there you go.
Check
go
it out.
Classics.
Yeah. It's got that stamp of approval, whatever that is worth. Okay, so my pick, again, that was classics and it's free. So my pick is Orba, and it's a game, and it's fantastic. It's very, very simple. And the deal with Orba is you are presented with, you know, tons of rows of little colored dots, little orbs, and it's very... what's the word I'm looking for? The game, the very classic, you know, match three game. What am I? Why is
sort of like Bejeweled.
It's exact. Yes, exactly. It's like Bejeweled, except you don't swap the pieces. You're just presented with, a set of randomly dropped down dots, and you start off with there's just three different colors: yellow, green, and blue, and it'll actually highlight for you where all of the matches are. So you tap wherever you want. To tap on which set is a match, and those get eliminated. And the idea is every single time you want to eliminate as many sets as possible to clear that board out. And because, you know, once you get to a point where you can't eliminate anymore, then the game is over. Now, it gets progressively harder and harder. Initially, it's very easy to get into this game because, like I said, it highlights all the matches for you. And the strategy is to eliminate the correct sets in an order that gets that allows you more sets to eliminate. So you have one undo, so you can go back once. So if you do something stupid, you shake and, you know, it lets you go back and try again. But they keep introducing more colors, so it gets harder that way. And it's such a well-designed game. It's very pretty. It's very easy to pick up. I had a friend last night who was, hey, let me try your iPhone. And, do you have any games on here? Oh, you know, check out this game, Orba. And they said, how do I play this game? And I said, well, the first thing you do, and without even saying anything, they just started playing the game. They figured it out immediately. So it's very cool. It's very fun. It's a very challenging game. And, it's $2. It's called Orba, O-R-B-A. And, yeah, it's awesome. Check it out. There's also a light version, so I think you can give it a...
so you can try it for free.
Yeah, you can try it for free. I'm not sure what they pull out of there. Maybe it's just super easy and it doesn't get any harder. I'm not sure. But Orba, check it out. And with that, I will say that you can find our iPhone picks, a list of our iPhone picks, as well as the show notes at iPhoneAlley.com/podcast. You can send your feedback, any questions or comments, or, you know, call us out on something we said wrong, some wrong facts or something like that. podcast@iPhoneAlley.com.
Like we'd ever have any wrong facts.
Yeah, and you can actually email Jeff especially for those.
or to tell me that you think that I don't know what I'm talking about with all the features that I don't think are going to be on the iPad.
Yeah, podcast@iPhoneAlley.com. You can find Jeff Gamet at The Mac Observer at MacObserver.com, iPodObserver.com, Twitter.com/JGamet. That's his Twitter. And anything else you're working on these days, Jeff?
I think that's a pretty full plate right there.
Cool. And you'll be at Macworld? We're all going to be at Macworld.
Yeah.
And I hope we can pull together a podcast while we're there.
Well, if all goes well, I'm sure it'll happen.
Cool. Yeah.
And how's that for being optimistic?
that's good. You can find Adam Christensen at the MacCast, MacCast.com, and of course, Twitter.com/MacCast. And Adam, are you working on anything cool yet now that you've stopped working for the man?
Yeah, I'm working on getting over a cold. Yeah, I have an episode due out soon, hopefully either tonight or Monday. Everybody will get something on their feet. I'm a little behind because I got hit Thursday with this nasty, nasty bug I'm just getting over. If people want to find me at Macworld, though, I guess the big thing I need to plug is we are having what's the order of these things? I think the podcaster meetup, the new medium meetup, happens Thursday night, if I'm getting that right. It's part of the... the Birds of a Feather sessions, and I'm trying to get up, pull up the data here. I could never figure out how to navigate Macworld's website.
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah, there's no way to get through that.
Here we go. No, it's not that
bad. What a great show. What a bad website.
Yeah, it's an awesome show. So Thursday, February 11th from 6:30 to 7:30, a bunch of podcasting, new media people get together in a room and we just talk about whatever we want to talk about. So, you know, how to start doing it, the kind of audio equipment you need, how do you monetize your podcast, whatever people want to bring up. So if you're curious at all, a lot of times people who are just fans of the shows come out. So you're on, pretty much, you know, a lot of your favorite Mac podcasters are going to be there. I'm going to be there. I hope you guys will be there. If you can, I know it gets crazy at Macworld.
I think
so.
I can make that.
Thursday. Yeah. 6:30 to 7:30 on Thursday, right before Cirque de Mac. So you can go to the podcaster meetup and blast over to Cirque de Mac.
Done. I'll do that. I'll be there.
Yeah. So that makes that easy. And then I'm also doing on the main stage on Friday for 30 minutes, a session called Your Mac Should Be on TV, Apple Home Theater Demystified. And I'm doing that with R. Derderian from the HDTV podcast. He comes on the MacCast and helps us talk to people about how to set up Mac Mini as home theater. So we're going to do a little mini session of that in about 30 minutes. So if you've ever wondered, how do I get a Mac Mini into my home theater setup? How do I encode videos? How do I manage my videos? How do I do that all over my network? All that kind of stuff. We're going to be covering those sorts of things. So that should be a lot of fun. And that's Friday the 12th on the main stage, which is in the expo. So you just need an expo pass to get in there. And it's 3:45 to 4:15.
And you'll be, I'm sure you'll be Twittering a lot of the stuff that you're doing. You're doing at
Follow
Mac
me
World.
On Twitter and you can stalk me all around. Mostly I'm going to be on the show floor doing interviews and things like that, going to the booths, trying to find the cool stuff for everybody who's unable to make it out, recording a lot of audio. I was thinking about doing video, but I think we're going to stick with the audio this year. I'm not quite ready to do the video thing yet.
So the podcaster meetup, where is that going to be?
You'll have to check the boards. It's the Birds of a Feather 1 session. They don't specifically list a room. So that should be up. Just look for, they should have a listing of all the Birds of a Feather sessions and what rooms they're in.
So it'll be at
one of the conference rooms. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And if you're interested in other coverage, twitter.com/iPhone Alley. I'll be Twittering a lot of stuff from there while I'm at Macworld. And I'm sure Jeff will be Twittering a whole bunch, twitter.com/jgamut again. And,
I definitely will.
Yep. And with that, another iPhone Alley podcast is done.
An iPod, a phone.
Adam Christensen's here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm drinking coffee. Can you hear me drink it?
No.
Oh, good. Then I'll continue drinking as we go.
You know, that's a lot less disturbing than you saying, hey, I'm shaving my back. Can you hear me?
So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck.